Bonk.
Dan.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
That's good.
How are you?
I'm good, and I'm better when I hear that things are good for you.
Well, you knew that. We live together. You're around me all the time. You know all my ways and hows.
Yeah, well, ways and hows?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
How I'm doing and why I feel that way.
Well, the folks at home don't know. Like, not all the folks at home live here within these walls.
Yeah, I know, but I like to imagine it's just you and me out in this big blue shiny ball we call Earth.
It's true, but to keep ourselves sane during a pandemic, we can talk into these microphones and then feel like, you know, folks...
We're tickling the ears of all the people out there.
Yeah, yeah, we are. There's people walking around right now. There's somebody on a train right now listening. Well, maybe not. Trains aren't really as much of a thing, so statistically, there's less of a chance there's somebody on a train right now. There's somebody mowing their lawn. No, people don't mow their lawns this time of year. I'm coming up
people
with bad...
People mow their lawns year-round.
They do? I thought it dies
grass,
at some point.
Grass grows all the time.
I think after the summer, you don't mow your lawn anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Because I remember it was like... Well, I mean, you live in the suburbs. You didn't have a time where, like, your dad was like, time to get the old lawnmower out of the garage again.
He never, like, referred to lawn mowing as something that only takes place during the spring and summer.
But did you notice it happening beyond that?
No.
Let me look it up. What months do you mow the lawn? Let me see here. Give your spring grass a chance to develop strong, healthy roots. Wait until it's at least 2 inches tall before mowing. Okay. Yeah, when to start mowing in spring. I'm seeing a lot of stuff like that. Like, yeah, you start mowing your lawn in the spring. I don't think you mow your lawn. Maybe it's different in different parts of the world. But,
well, I don't know. I could also be wrong. I mean, I can't imagine my dad mowing in the cold.
Right. Have you ever once seen Grillman put on a heavy winter coat to go mow the lawn?
That's a good point.
There you go.
I don't think I have.
And he's always shorts and a tank top, right? And
yeah.
He's sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I'm kind of excited for when we eventually have a house, which is constantly in flux. But I like the idea of mowing lawns, especially nowadays with some nice noise-canceling headphones and podcasts. And I'm sure that, like, lawnmower technology has advanced since I was 12.
I would hope. I worry about little bunny rabbits and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'd be no good. I saw some of that when I was a child.
Really?
It was behind my dad's house. There was a church right over the fence, and we used to walk around there. And on the playground, a lawnmower had definitely gone over a bunch of baby bunny rabbits.
A bunch?
I think there were several. It was hard to tell how many there were.
Wait a minute. If a bunch are killed, that seems like that's intentional.
No, it definitely
how
seemed like a lawnmower accident.
How could you accidentally kill a bunch of
I think they were in one place. Like,
oh
it was like
God,
a nest or
something.
That's
so sad.
Yeah. I just remember getting like a glance of it and then looking away. My dad was like, baby bunnies. Yeah, it's no good.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah. Back when I was a kid living in Kansas, yeah, walking down the train tracks with my dad and seeing that dog that just got demolished. And
what?
Yeah. There was like a big dog. Like, it wasn't a husky, but it was like a big, like, kind of... It was like a white fur dog's. I kind of remember my dad and I used to walk by the train tracks and we would put like pennies and stuff on it and wait for trains to go by and then we'd see the flattened pennies and, you know, Midwest stuff. I remember one time we stopped doing it because we were walking down the train tracks and we just saw like right across one of the tracks was a dog that was just like, I mean, like, it's like part of its body was there. I can't remember necessarily if it was the front or the back, but it was like I could see part of a dog for sure. But then it was just a bunch of mess. Not good. Not good.
No.
So we stopped walking on the train tracks.
That's so sad.
It's not good stuff to see as a child.
Yeah, I saw a cat roadkill a few months ago, and it's just so disturbing to think like, man, that's someone's pet.
Yeah, I don't even like feel like I know like seeing deer and raccoons and stuff like that and possums are a common sight on America's highways, but like even then it's just like I mean even like a dead bird or whatever, I'm just like that sucks.
Yeah, it makes me sad, but like seeing like a domestic animal
yeah.
like a cat or a dog is just like unfathomable.
Different level for sure.
Yeah, jeez.
Speaking of things you shouldn't see as a child, Lethal Weapon. Was that good?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw. So we're talking about Lethal Weapon this week, 1987's Lethal Weapon. Not the the hit new series with Damon Wayans and some guy I've never heard of.
What?
They made a TV series out of it. It's probably already canceled.
Wait, out of based on the Lethal Weapon?
It's called Lethal Weapon. It's based on, I think it's Murtaugh and Riggs. Yeah, Lethal Weapon TV show. While I was looking up some stuff, I was like, oh, right, they made that. Is it Stifler? Wait, is Stifler the guy? Yeah, I think it might be Stifler and Damon Wayans. In Lethal Weapon.
Damon Wayans.
Mm-hmm. From In Living Color. Mm. Yeah, that's probably bad. This movie is pretty good, but I want to touch on the not good to see it when you're a child thing.
Okay, yeah, I definitely have never seen this movie.
This is your first time?
Yeah.
This was not my first time, because I think I probably saw it when I was like 7 or 8 years old. It's the first time I've watched it with an understanding of what was going on. Let me tell you what it was like when I was 7 or 8. So I just remember growing up, like, I just loved movies, loved them, loved them, loved them, just watched everything. And I learned pretty quickly that I was really into action movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw Terminator 2 when I was 7. My mom took me to the theater, and it just blew my mind. And so my stepdad at the time worked at a movie rental store. So he always had just like a ton of different, like, you know, he would just have like crates of VHS tapes mm-hmm. he would bring home. And I would just, I don't know how many times, I would just like go through all these things and just look for a movie where it's just like dude with a gun and an explosion in the background or something. Like, well, I'm watching this. And Lethal Weapon looks like a, like sure. That's the type of VHS I would see and be like, yes, I will put this in the VCR and watch this right now as a child. And this movie doesn't waste time with getting to some adult content. Now, why don't you describe what happens right at the beginning here?
The first scene is that blonde girl with her top, like her boobs hanging out, just like giggling and rolling around on a table.
Yeah.
And snorting cocaine.
Yeah.
And then jumping off the balcony.
Immediately. So imagine being 7 or 8 years old. First of all, very worried that somebody's going to see me with boobs on the screen. Although, here's the thing. There's like an arc to like how worried you are mm-hmm. that your parents are going to see you with boobs
all right,
on the screen.
Explain all the different levels.
So when you're like 7 or 8, I think it's more just like, ah, what? I don't think... I'm not used to seeing naked ladies, but it's not like there's not the sexual. You don't have the shame about it. You don't have you know the filthy thoughts.
There's
about
just
it.
An inner voice that tells you this is wrong,
and an inner voice that's going to be like, this is going to be very important in some time, but not right now. give me a few years. I can tell this is going to be something I need to circle back to repeatedly.
So, this little blonde girl jumping off the balcony of the building.
Well, no, it's just the beginning where it's just like
it's one for the spank bank.
Before we get to the coke and suicide, it's just a pretty lady that's naked, and as a 7 or 8 year old, just something's just like, well, there's something going on here. I don't think I know yet.
Like when the dogs sense that something is up when we start getting stuff together, and, yeah. Like during the day.
Just some innate sense is just firing in your brain. But when you're 7 or 8, again, it's not tied to any filthy thoughts or anything like that. It's just like, something's up here. Later on, when I'm watching like The Rock with my parents or something, that's when you have a greater sense of what's going on.
I don't remember anything sexually explicit in The Rock.
That's because there's nothing significant at all. There is a scene where Nicolas Cage is out on the deck in San Francisco before he has to go to Alcatraz with his girlfriend, and she's just kind of like riding him on top. They're like in like a deck chair or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is when he gets the call for like, hey, we need you to come by, Goodspeed. We found a crazy package or whatever. And it's just like her on top of him for maybe 20 seconds going, like just doing like light breathy moaning, and she's got a bra on. You know, there's not even nudity, but like they're having sex. And so I've watched The Rock with my mother several times. You time that poop, that fake poop, every single time where it's like, oh, it's almost that scene. I'm gonna go sit in the bathroom for a while.
So if you were forced to sit there while that scene was happening, like what disastrous thing could happen? Are you
afraid I just get really
of
nervous
errant boner or something?
I just was so terrified that I just was so uncomfortable with the idea of, like, sex or anything coming up in conversation.
You didn't even want your mom to know that you knew about it?
No. I just didn't want to be in the same... if there were three... If there's me, my mom, and then anything remotely sexual in nature, never should the three meet, you know? Like, no, like, conversation. Well, because she was... look, I'm not going to go into a whole psychoanalysis thing here, but her and my stepdad at the time were extremely open with innuendo and things that I think they thought went over my head, but were not subtle
because
at all.
As far as your mom knows, you've never even seen an innocuous sex scene like the one in The Rock.
That's true. Like
I
was,
maybe if you were more willing to, you know...
Maybe...
She would know not to make these horrible innuendos.
Did I ever tell you about when my dad gave me the talk?
No.
Oh, man. This is just perfect. So keep in mind, I'm like 16 at this point. But most 16-year-olds know what's up with that stuff.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
I was still, you know, maybe 15 years from experiencing it, but I knew what was up.
So, yeah, I actually took your virginity.
Yes,
it was
at 30.
Beautiful.
Beautiful, yes. No, I distinctly remember this. We were on Lackman Road around like the 70th Street or so in Shawnee, Kansas, heading to my grandma's house at the time. I'm 16. Been copiously whacking off for 4 years, okay? Just going to town all the time. I am very intimately familiar with how this operation works.
Okay.
Okay. My father thinks now is the time to teach me about the birds and the bees. And so we're at a stop sign, and my dad's like, hey, so I want to talk to you about something. I was like, oh, God, what? And he goes, okay. So do you know how, like, kids are born? And I was like, oh, yeah. And like, you know, like, you know, the lady gets pregnant, and I know it's, you know, your wife
the
gets
lady.
Pregnant. Yeah, yeah.
It's medical terms.
I mean, that's honestly probably how he put it. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I understand. Like, ladies get pregnant, you know, when you're married and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I know. But, like, you know, like.
They get pregnant when you're not married.
I know. Well, look, we were Catholic boys. he was like, yeah, but do you know, like, how it, like, works and all that? And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, I think he was hoping.
Wait, did you know what
I
he meant?
I totally knew.
So
but I was just playing it stupid because I just didn't want to confront any of this stuff. And so I could tell he was hoping that I already knew and wouldn't have to ask.
Yeah, well,
he didn't want to explain it.
At 16 years old, I would think you would know.
Maybe exactly. It might have been more like 14 or 15, but it was too old to be getting this talk. He should have known. Actually, it was definitely not 16. It must have been more like 14. But he goes, okay, so when you're with a lady and you think she's pretty, when you're older, like.
But she's got to be pretty.
That's probably how he put it. He goes, so like your penis gets bigger. And I remember I sold it like I didn't know this. I was like, bigger? And the fact that I went bigger and acted surprised, he just started laughing, like cracking up. And then we just went to my grandma's house and never talked about it again. That was the end of the conversation.
Just you saying bigger?
Yeah, because I think I probably oversold it. I was like, bigger? Yeah, I think that's what that really tickled him.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. So the whole conversation sounded like it lasted like 10 seconds.
It was like a stop at a stop sign, basically. Which, you know what, isn't any better or worse than how my dad got it from my grandpa, which is a short story. My dad was out there flying a kite, and my grandpa comes out and is like, well, son, you know, you know how the birds and the bees, or you know how babies are made? And my dad's like, no. And somehow my grandpa just goes, well, even like Father Kernacki has wet dreams. He just brought up that the priest has wet dreams and didn't like explain.
That was how he explained the whole concept?
That's all my dad remembers is my dad just desperately wanting to fly a kite and for my and for my grandpa to stop talking about this and him just going like, oh, Father Kernacki has wet dreams. My dad's being like, what? So, you know, us Reichert boys, very clear.
I don't know if I ever had a talk or anything like that. I know I had, like, the talk with my mom about getting my period, and I did not understand it at all. Because, like, as far as I knew, it was just like, oh, well, at a certain point, blood's just going to gush out of your vagina.
Boy.
And, yeah, I didn't really understand what the deal was there. Like, I knew about tampons, but I had no conception of, like, how they worked, because I didn't know about, like, I had a vagina, but I didn't know anything about it being a kid. It was like, where did it, like, I couldn't understand tampons.
I don't think anyone to date has that talk with guys, because I don't think most guys know.
you put the tampon, this is probably, I know some people are maybe sensitive to this and they want to hear it, but it just, if you want to look up how tampons work, you could just find that information on the internet. But
I really think, I've described it to you before, it's like when tampon commercials come on TV or you walk by a tampon aisle and you're a guy, it's really like that stuff in Westworld when like a robot sees something about a robot and it's like, I just don't see anything. Like, this doesn't mean anything. Like, what? Like, it's just like a blur over that aisle at Target or the commercial. It's like, why is the TV not on? Like, I hear sound, but it's like peanuts talking. Mm.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have a sex talk. I think it's partially because, well, I don't know if this is, this. It probably wasn't a conscious choice on my parents' part, but being a young woman, you're kind of inundated with, you know, sex stuff from as soon as you start looking like a young woman, I mean, it's unavoidable. So it's like, well, yeah, I already know what the deal is here because, you know, you constantly have people yelling at you and saying stuff to you and hitting on you when you're 12 because you look like you're 20. Yeah, good times.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's all right.
No. Yeah, so it's a detour.
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon. So,
how did
okay.
we get here?
Because we're talking about things you're not supposed to see as a kid.
Right.
And so, okay, here's how Lethal Weapon hits me right off the bat with a, whoa, there's boobs going on.
Okay.
And then it's like, why is she putting sugar in her nose? And I didn't know anything about cocaine.
I don't understand why people do that either.
I did not understand that.
When I used to make movies with my friend Christina when we were kids, we always used confectionery sugar as cocaine.
And you would actually like...
We'd pretend it's cocaine, yeah.
You would sniff it up, though?
I don't know if we
could just
do
pretend.
That.
Yeah. You were making movies about cocaine when you were a child?
Yes. I was really young, yeah.
Do you have these?
I'm sure they exist somewhere.
Oh, boy. So we got boobs, we got cocaine, and also I don't think I understood the concept of suicide. Mm. And so, like, I think I watched this and I was like, why is she standing there? Oh, is she just, like, sleepy or, like, sleepwalking? And, oh, she fell. Like, and so I didn't realize that she killed herself there. But then, within, like, a few minutes, you got Mel Gibson just shoving a gun in his mouth. And I remember just being like, whoa, he's like, you know, there's no questioning what's going on there. He is putting it in there. He is clearly in distress. And so, like, this movie is just, like, taught me, like, suicide, cocaine, you know, there's boobs, like, all in the first, like, 5 or 10 minutes. Like, it really gets going right away.
Yeah, I am. Well, not to mention Danny Glover's first scene is also in the buff.
Everyone's naked at the
beginning
of this.
Everyone's naked.
The woman, yeah. Danny Glover's in the bath, and Mel Gibson is naked walking around his trailer.
By the way, Danny Glover's taking a bath. His entire family comes in the bathroom. That's so weird to me. Like, that's weird, right?
It's extremely weird, and it's not established that he's, like, wearing swimsuit.
Why would he be? He's in the
exactly.
bath.
So it's like he's just sitting in there, and, like, you would think when the whole family or even someone comes in there, it's like, hey, I'm in the bath. What the hell?
Yeah. It's one thing if there was, like, an ample amount of, like, suds so that, like, the water, you could not make any, you can't see the water at all. You can't make out the lower body, but it was just water.
And it's not like a quick come in, like, happy birthday, here's your cake. Like, they, like, have a conversation. They're, like, leaning against the bath, like, hey, Dad, so, hey.
They're, like, giving him kisses?
Yeah, it's, like, 50 years old, huh? Let's have a conversation. He's just sitting there totally naked.
Yeah, that's weird.
Three kids and a wife just sitting there. Yeah. Whole thing. The movie itself from 1987, directed by Richard Donner, written by Shane Black. I like movies like this a lot, where I like movies that blend genres quite a bit, like a Terminator, where it's like, oh, it's action, it's sci-fi. You know, the first one had a bit of horror and stuff in there. But I also really like movies that, like, let's say you worked at a Blockbuster when it came out on tape and you're holding it and your boss is like, hey, go put this up on the shelf. There's no question what genre it goes into.
Right.
This is an action movie through and through.
I mean, it's called Lethal Weapon.
Yes. The name, the box, this is just firmly buddy cop. This is like the 80s buddy cop movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice to see something like this that is so earnest, where it's like, I don't know, like, I think 80s action movies and, like, the buddy cop idea and everything has been done so much now that, like, it kind of borders on parody. But with this one, it's just like, well, this is just really earnest. You know, it's not trying to, like, wink at the camera or anything. It's like, that's what this movie is.
Yeah, like I said, I hadn't seen the movie before. I didn't know much about it other than, you know, buddy cop. But yeah, I was really impressed with that as well, how grounded it was and how it was really more about the two central characters.
Totally.
Like, the action was kind of secondary to all of that. And, like, the main story was, really. It was, I mean, the fact that, as you say, within a few minutes of meeting Riggs, Mel Gibson's character, he has a gun in his mouth. He's mourning the death of his wife, who died recently in a car crash. It's just really sad. And like, the main arc of the movie is, like, their relationship together, kind of blossoming together, and then his ultimate, you know, resolution that he doesn't want to kill himself.
Yeah, and the way they play off each other is great. And, like, honestly, both actors are awesome here. Like, Mel Gibson, complete piece of shit, obviously, but, like, he, as an actor here, playing
Riggs. Yeah, he's a piece of shit, but I think he's great in movies.
I mean, he's really excellent in this.
Yeah.
So Riggs is just supposed to be this kind of, like, loose cannon, suicidal, like, is he a psychopath? Or, like, what's his deal? Is he actually crazy or is he playing crazy?
Yeah, that's another, like, thing that's, like, distinctly 80s is they keep referring to this guy as crazy because he's suicidal. There's probably nothing more rational than wanting to kill yourself in this day and age, right? Like, I mean, he's, you know, depressed. It's not crazy. It's, and they're treating him like he should be in a what,
like,
is it called?
Asylum, like, or something.
Yeah, in a padded room. Yeah, it's definitely a a time capsule.
Well, they even
feel like
talk...
it's treated with so much more nuance now.
Well, yeah. There's even that conversation about, like, the 80s man in the police station where it's like, oh, everyone's too sensitive now. Like, mm-hmm. oh, the 80s man talks about his emotions and, like, cries and stuff. Like, it's very much, like, I don't know if it's playing on that stuff or if it's just, like, that was kind of a product of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure talk around, like, a police station in the 80s was more like that.
Yeah. And, yeah, Riggs himself was, like, obviously he was struggling with that and being depressed and stuff, but... he is also, like, an eccentric character, mm-hmm. not, like, off the wall, crazy and wild. Like you know, when you talk about there being parody buddy cops, there's always, like, yeah. the straight man and then the one that's a loose cannon wild card. Like, it's not like that at all. But it's definitely sillier, and he's more, like, he talks a lot, and he's kind of reckless in that he's willing to put himself in danger. It's probably a side effect of kind of just being suicidal in general, but, like... yeah, and then to know, too, that he's just so incredibly good as a marksman yeah. is, like, really cool, I thought.
Yeah, and, like, you get the sense that, again, he's not completely out of his mind. Like, I think he knows that his methods are unconventional. Like, when that guy's about to kill himself jumping off the store,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, he knows that it's weird to, like, get up on the balcony and, like, you know, all the other cops and Danny Glover are like, what's this guy doing?
Mm-hmm.
But it ultimately works. You know, he handcuffs the guy and jumps off with him. Like, yeah, his methods are crazy, yeah. but he gets the job done.
Yeah, I think, too, like, this taking place, like, what, like, a decade and a half after Vietnam?
Yeah.
You know, a lot, like, the main characters, Busey, Mel Gibson, and Dan
the
Glover.
General that's in charge yeah. of the, like, heroin ring.
Yeah, yeah, they're all Vietnam vets, and you kind of see that suggested as, like, why they act certain ways, why they're more, you know, maybe they have PTSD kind of thing. So, and like, if you think about it, you know, 1987, the gentlemen in that would be that age well, yeah. when this movie came out were probably kind of... you know, trying to resolve that as well. And, you know, people were hopefully at that point, I wasn't alive then, but hopefully at that point, people were more like, you know, instead of dismissive of, you know, what these soldiers went through, empathetic and trying to get them help and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, that's the entire plot of the first Rambo is that he comes back from Vietnam, but like there was a, like, the people coming back from Vietnam were not treated well
right,
by
right.
Americans because they figured, oh, you know, baby killers. And like, right. so, yeah, like seeing media that kind of deals with that in a nuanced way is... because it doesn't beat you over the head with it in this movie at
right.
all. Like, Nam is definitely a thing that is referenced a lot, and all the characters have mm-hmm. that backstory. But it's not done really cartoonishly or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, like, you see, like, the main antagonists, Gary Busey and the McAllister guy. I forgot the name of the actor.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But they were both, like, special forces, too. So, like, their past kind of manifesting in criminal activity now, using their, you know, insane abilities to, you know, bring... drugs in and out of the country. Yeah, it's interesting how kind of deeper it is than you would think. I kind of anticipated it being a typical popcorn action movie, and it really wasn't that at all.
No, it's like there's even that subtle part when, like, Gibson is leaving Danny Glover's place for the first time, and mm-hmm. he's getting in his truck, and he's like, man, this is the only thing I'm good at.
Right.
You know, it's like these guys coming back from Vietnam that were there young, and they were like, that's what they had to get good at, mm-hmm. and that's their skills when they came back. But yeah, you mentioned, like, expecting it to be, like, a normal action movie from mm-hmm. the era. And, like, you know I love, you know, the Commandos and the Roadhouses where it's just, like, it's cheese.
Oof, Roadhouse is great.
It's great, but it's, like, that cheese great. Even, yeah. like, Commando where it's, like, okay, it's total Arnold one-liners. It's very ridiculous.
I feel like Commando is the greatest distillation of that, like, 80s popcorn movie.
Yes. It's just Arnold killing guys in hilarious ways and then saying hilarious things with, like, zero nuance. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, I love the zero nuance 80s movies. But I also really like this one that was, it's a different tone,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it really, really works.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I would say a lot of the that we're talking about is in the first half of the movie, like the kind of character building.
Definitely.
It does get a little more traditional action-y, like in the back half, which we'll talk about the end in a second here. But yeah, I think it's more character heavy early on.
Right.
I would say. But yeah, you know, we don't need to go over the whole basic plot or anything. It's just like these Nam guys, they basically came back and started the heroin operation and Danny Glover's friend wants to get out of it. And, you know, Gary Busey and this general are basically like trying to kill him. It's like, oh shit, you're going to rat to the cops. And they're trying to like kill his daughters and stuff.
Right. And they're like they're killing machines. There's, like I said, special forces guys. So if they want you dead, you're going to be dead.
Yeah. Gary Busey is intimidating in this movie.
Yeah. He is a scary guy.
He's usually wacky.
He's goofier.
Yeah, he's usually wacky, crazy. Like this one, he's got like an intensity to him that like you kind of buy him as this character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love the soundtrack. So it's a couple things work in its favor here. So it's Michael Kamen, who is fresh off of Highlander, doing that soundtrack, the non-Queen parts of Highlander, and Eric Clapton, who they brought
who's
in.
Who's that guy?
He's a dick too. But they brought him in to do Riggs's theme, which, you know, Mel Gibson, you know, two dicks. Mm. but you can definitely tell when it's Clapton.
I didn't know Eric Clapton was.
Oh, look up some stuff. He's a legendary asshole.
Oh, okay.
Like just racist. Total.
He doesn't get a pass because his son fell out of a 50-story.
No, thing. He sucks. Eric Clapton sucks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You can write Tears in Heaven all day. Like, you know, tragic thing, but like, no, Eric Clapton's a dick. But you can tell him doing Riggs's theme. It's just the most Clapton-y, like bluesy riff.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it is extremely MacGruber. And because like, obviously I recognize so many parts of MacGruber that are like, oh, this is clearly kind of playing off this trope or whatever. There were parts where like Gibson would walk into frame and you'd hear just like, and I'm like, that is just straight up. Yeah. Like that is just a MacGruber walking into frame.
Yeah.
Or something.
And there's an abundance of sexy sax noise too.
There's mournful sax. There's sexy sax. There's one part. God, there's a direct line. Okay. So there's a part where Gary Busey shoots Riggs with like a shotgun and attempt to drive by to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And they drive away assuming he's dead, but he had a vest on. And at one point they basically say like, they think you're dead. That's a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the MacGruber thing where they think he's dead, but he just walks in and like grabs a microphone. That was a huge advantage. Yes. Don't need to go over all the plot points, but like there's some fun stuff going on with them tracking down, like trying to get to the bottom of this before they know the whole story.
Yeah.
They go to try to find, because the girl that kills herself at the beginning was working as like a prostitute and pornographic actress. They go to her pimp and there's this whole thing where like Gibson just shoots everyone and he just kills everyone immediately. And it's very kind of like Terminator 2, like, dude, you can't just kill everyone. Shoot him in the leg. Like Danny Glover's trying to teach some restraint. And I thought the pool scene was interesting with that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he ends up saving Danny Glover.
Yeah.
I don't know what message is to be gleaned from that other than it's okay to shoot him.
Well, but he was trying not to for a second, because Danny Glover shoots the pimp in the leg. And what happened? He winds up getting pushed into a pool.
Yeah, he had like another gun on him or something that he was like, you know, secretly fiddling with. And he goes to shoot Danny Glover and then he gets shot and falls like onto the pool.
Doesn't he? Does he shoot him into the pool? That's right. And it's got that weird like tarp on it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a kind of a crazy scene where he's like wrapped up and they're trying to like save him, but you just see him dying.
That was cool.
Yeah. Like really unique kind of just like, I don't know if I'd call them set pieces, but just circumstances.
Yeah. It isn't as bombastic as most set pieces in action movies, like with huge car chases or, you know, massive explosions. Like there is an explosion. There is a car chase, but it's not like
it's not Bad Boys.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Bad Boys is another buddy cop movie, but like they're driving, you know, a semi truck and throwing cars off the back on the highway. It's not that.
Right.
That said, General McAllister does die in hilarious fashion after a car chase thing. Oh, or is it because Gibson's shooting down on him while he's trying to escape in a car?
He's in the car. His car hits a bus, and he has all these grenades in the car.
Yes.
And because of the fire, the grenades detonate.
Yes. I was, I loved that. That's a very stupid, fun 80s way to die.
Yeah.
basically, the middle parts are like a lot of Danny Glover sweating and yelling, and a lot of Mel Gibson making wild man faces and like growling.
Honestly, my favorite part of the movie was when Riggs goes over for dinner. I love that because you get all the family interactions and everything, and like not only between Murtaugh's family, but also like them responding to the weirdness of Riggs, and like Riggs and Murtaugh kind of getting along and their friendship blooming there. And yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it made me think too about like, because I think I'd seen the first, I think I've seen 1, 2, and 4 of mm-hmm. these movies. And I couldn't remember, there's a scene in 2, I didn't know if it was in this one or not, but he's at home, Murtaugh is, and he's taking a shit. And then he finds out, he's like reading something and like finds out that like there's a bomb in the toilet or on the toilet or something. And like if he stands up, it's going to blow up. And just like, it's just a lot of Danny Glover just sitting on the can, just like sweating as like Mel Gibson and people are trying to figure out like how to defuse this bomb.
Is that
on
where
toilet.
He is for most of the movie?
It's like, I feel like it's the scene people talk about from that movie. And I was trying to remember if it was in this one, but it's like, no, it seems like bad guys are just constantly invading Danny Glover's house. Like so much happens around his house.
Yeah, that would be so bad. Can you imagine like if a bunch of like bomb diffusing robots and police and SWAT teams all had to look at your poo?
I mean, you could reach back and flush. Well, I don't know, unless okay. I mean, I don't remember, that could be how the bomb is triggered, in which case just don't flush and have a stinky bathroom and then call the cops.
Yeah, but everyone's gonna look at your poo.
Yeah, you know what, that's a small price to pay for not blowing up.
That's true.
Speaking of blowing up, they go to Dixie, a prostitute who knew the girl from the beginning. They go to her house and it just explodes. I thought that was a cool mm-hmm. scene because it's very much like they're just in kind of like jokey mode walking towards the house and all of a sudden.
And they were skeptical that it would even lead, like pan out to anything.
Yeah, they're like, this is jack shit. This is a false lead or something. And then poof, it just completely explodes. Mm-hmm. I thought that was awesome. And then the big bad guy thing at the end is they kidnap Danny Glover's daughter. And that led to a pretty cool meetup in the desert, I thought.
Yeah,
I thought that part was cool. So yeah, it's just a big, like, it reminded me of that Breaking Bad scene near the end, that Ozymandias episode.
Say My Name?
Yeah. Well, no.
The
more climactic one. Yeah. My favorite part of this is they think Riggs is dead. Mel Gibson is dead. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing this meetup and they're like trying to get information from Danny Glover.
I think it was going to be like an exchange, right? Danny Glover for the girl, they wanted information from Danny Glover for the girl.
Yeah, they kept asking for like information that like Hunsaker had told him or something. Right. I don't remember what it was, but it was like a billion bad guys with a helicopter of bad guys and the daughter and Danny Glover. And then all of a sudden, the bad guys start getting like picked off mm-hmm. like crazy. And then there's this part where like Busey instantly realizes what's going on. And he just goes, damn it, it's Riggs. I love that like moment of realization of like, oh, only one guy could be doing it this good. Right. You know, that part's awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then we get some torture scenes. Yeah, they both get, like, caught and tortured.
Seems really uncomfortable. Can you imagine being in that position, like, knowing you're just going to be tortured for a really long time and you don't even know, like, what you could possibly say to stop it?
That's the thing. In scenes like that, like, there's a part where Gibson is telling the guy who's torturing him, he's like, dude, I don't know anything. I can't tell you anything. And, like, imagine being in that situation where you actually don't have the lever you can pull, where it's like, I've had enough, here's the info you want, if you don't know it. It's like, well, this sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we never find ourselves in that situation.
I can't imagine. Let's hope not. But then this is where Riggs gets pretty hardcore. He breaks out. He does a real Jack Bauer move here where he, like, you know, he's getting tortured and he pulls his mm-hmm. legs up and snaps the dude's neck. And then he just comes in there where Danny Glover is getting tortured and just wrecks shop. Just goes to town. This is where, like, they talked about how he does all these, like, martial arts and stuff. And it's all in this payoff here where he's just going around fucking everyone up.
Right.
And then they, like, they're in the back of, like, some, like, nightclub that they're using as a front. And he just comes out there and, like, the music is, like, playing loud. There's, like, an active nightclub thing going on. And he just walks out and, like, shoots a dude that's working behind the counter. And, like, he walks up to a guy, like, on the dance floor mm-hmm. and shoots him. And, like, there's a while before the people realize what's going on.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, Riggs seems, like, really fucking cool in this moment.
I love when there's someone that's just unbelievably good at what they do.
Yeah,
in a movie,
And especially when things come to a head. I mean, if you're doing that tone the whole way through, it doesn't really play. But when it's like you're hearing about this guy being mm-hmm. a badass, and then like kind of at the end you see him snipe everyone, and he's just like kicking everyone's ass, mm-hmm. like great payoff.
Reminds me of you ever watch Boardwalk Empire?
I haven't. No.
There was this really, really amazing scene where this one of my favorite characters, but I forgot his name because it's been a really long time since that show was on. But he was like a war veteran, and half his face was blown off, so he wore this like mask. And it was like the main antagonist throughout this whole season was this like mob kind of affiliated group, and this guy goes in and just destroys, like, you hear about him being like an amazing marksman throughout the whole show, and he just goes in and just cleans house. It's one of my favorite scenes ever.
Is it a guy that actually has the actor that has the scar on his face?
I don't think he Michael. Has. It was CG. When he would take the mask off, his like face would be missing.
Oh, like missing.
Yeah, like half of his face is gone. So he wears this. It was set in like the 20s, so they don't have the technology really. But
got it.
But yeah, that was amazing. I'll share it on the Discord. Yeah,
cool. And then the ending here takes place back at Murtaugh's house, which I really like the part where, because they know that Busey's going to go there to try to kill Murtaugh. And the cop car like barrels through with the sirens blaring and everything. But they do the old trick where you put something on the pedal and
that old trick.
The old trick. And then it ends. So here's the thing. I thought this fist fight at the end was a bit goofy because it's like kind of tonally weird because it's like, so it's Mel Gibson telling Gary Busey, like, oh, you want a shot at the champ? And they have this, like, long fist fight.
It's really long.
It's long, and they're grabbing poles and stuff. It's like a real, it's like, cheesy isn't the word, but it's over the top in a way that the rest of the movie isn't. And it's also weird because there's, like, a million cops around at this point, and they could all just, like, swarm him and arrest him easily.
Right.
And so it's weird for them all to be like, no, let's let this play out, not knowing if he has a gun or something, you know? I thought that was weird, but then again, while I was watching this, one part of my brain is going like, this is a little over the top. The other part that is just like this loves the hell out of Metal Gear. I can't say a bad thing about a dramatic final fist fight in the rain at night. Like, that is a real Metal Gear type thing. So I'm okay with that.
On the lawn of a suburban family home.
Yeah, during Christmas and Christmas stuff. Which, there is a great line here. They don't even make a big deal of it, but I loved it. It's after he gets the shit kicked out of him, Gary Busey's laying there covered in mud, and you just hear Danny Glover go, "Get that shit off my lawn!" Oh my God, that's such a good one. And of course, the classic, he says it a couple times in the movie, I'm too old for this shit.
Too old for this.
Yeah. It's, again, but it's earnest. It's all like,
yeah, you know. I really liked it. Like I said, definitely surpassed my expectations and was not what I expected. So
you were just expecting it to be like dumber, basically, right?
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's interesting. They made a movie with, I think it was Emilio Estevez and Samuel L. Jackson after this came out, called Loaded Weapon. And it's like a very like airplane type parody of this. So I think, you know, this was like the actual like good serious one. And then like that, it makes fun of the tropes more.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, I as a fan of 80s action, I really, really did love this. And again, in a different way that I love a Commando or something like that.
Totally.
So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it's a nice new color in the palette of action movies that the 80s has brought to us.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to watch like 2, 3, and 4 anytime soon. But like, I remember like it gets a little wacky and that like Joe Pesci comes in around 3. And I think it starts leaning into the comedy stuff more. And then 4 is like Jet Li and Chris Rock are in it. And it starts with like a guy in like a flamethrower jetpack suit, like walking down the streets of LA, like shooting flamethrowers at everyone. So it gets a little weirder and wackier and stuff like that. So I think this is probably the best one.
Cool.
Excellent. So that is A Lethal Weapon. Lethal
Weapon.
I was
saying it like how you said it.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm clarifying for the folks at home because I messed up by making it sound like A Lethal Weapon. It's Lethal Weapon on HBO Max, 1987. Excellent action film. Before we go, thank you to everyone
is
part of our Patreon. It's patreon.com/paintingthestream. You get your episodes early.
Wow.
You get them on Saturday instead of Sunday. You get them ad-free each and every week.
Wow.
You get access to our Discord. And most importantly, you get written for you by Bonk. You get your own Bonk who?
That's right, Daniel.
Do we have one this week, Bonk?
We sure do.
What do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Francisco.
Francisco, hello.
Thank you for your support. We really appreciate it. And this Bonku is for you.
Is this Francisco, my foot doctor?
We saw Francisco disappear into the sea when high tide arrived.
Oh, geez. Have we confirmed he's okay?
No.
Christ. Okay, well, I hope he gets his Bonku. You don't seem too concerned about Francisco.
I mean, I've spent my time mourning already. There's not much more I can do or say.
Oh, this took a dark turn at the end here. Jeez. All right. Well, Francisco, we're thinking about you. Hope, swim parallel to the shore. All right. So, we got a Hugh question of the week coming up here.
Hugh game.
And it is.
Coming up here.
What?
Coming up here after the commercial break.
Did I say coming up here? Oh, I just meant immediately. I didn't have to say anything. I could have just said it. I didn't have to preface it with anything. I could have just read the card. And I've just wasted everyone's time now. I apologize to everyone. All right. What is the longest line you have ever stood in, and what were you waiting for?
Ooh, that's an interesting cue.
Mm-hmm.
How about you answer first?
I mean, if you count like the waiting overnight for like a game console type thing, but that's not like a moving line. That's like a, hey, we're just waiting for the store to open. We have to hold. It is technically a line, but yeah, it's not in the spirit of this, I think.
Yeah.
I would say it's when the Mamba roller coaster opened up at Worlds of Fun in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was extremely excited about the Mamba, and it was like, at the shortest time, it was like a 2 or 3 hour wait.
Yeah. So. Now that you say that, it would definitely be something amusement park related. Because
yeah.
You would have to wait for like some of these rides a minimum of like 2 hours.
Yeah. And it's like, it's always fun, but it's like, I'm glad line technology has gotten better between like some places have the thing where you get the buzzer and it tells you when to come up, or other ones have like, hey, if you pay for the fast pass, you do this, or the ones where it's a single rider only.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's still not great, and some of them you have to wait. Like, when I was at the Universal Studios recently, we got on some, like, Harry Potter thing, and it was, like, it was a long, winding line, and mm-hmm. there was no way around it. But in general, like, when we went to Six Flags, when your brain fell out of your skull, remember?
Well, we had the Fast Pass.
We did have the Fast Pass. It was amazing.
It was amazing. We didn't have to wait on any line.
The unfortunate part was you scrambled up your brains like scrambled eggs on the first ride.
Yeah, that was rough. I was so disappointed. I was looking forward to that so much. We spent all this money on the fast passes. I was so excited about this because that's what I wanted to do for my bachelorette party, and it didn't work out for reasons I don't know. But so Dan made it up to me and was like, well, we'll go together. And I was so excited about it. Got the fast passes. We go on like the Joker ride or something, and like I had never felt that way before in my entire life, and it was really disappointing because I look forward to the crazy roller coasters. Like,
I still want to go back and do that again, but I want you to like, you know, take a Dramamine or something, which you've taken mm-hmm. before for motion sickness, and hope things are better. But I know that rocked you.
Oh yeah, it was like a not only physical but like mental thing as well. I was just so nervous and like. It was like, I felt like, I don't know if I've ever had a panic attack, but that's the closest that I've ever felt.
I mean, the way you describe it and the way you talk about it, it, you know, I can't say for sure not mm-hmm. knowing what you felt, but like your fear of going back to that. I mean, that is what panic attack will cause, that where mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I had a panic attack on the highway or at the dentist. I can mm-hmm. speak from experience. And now I have trouble going back to that because I fear the panic attack more than the actual thing. You're not afraid of the ride, you know? But yeah, I would say the Mamba at Worlds of Fun is probably the longest line I've ever waited in. Mamba's a good ride. It's a good roller coaster. It is. That is it for today. I'd say these dogs are pretty good.
And they're going to get their din, the ultimate TREAT.
Oh, here we go. Folks at home, you can follow us at Pan the Stream. You can give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast if you feel so inclined. Thanks for your support.
Thank you.
And we will return next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.